Great. Who can I trust? Well, Conrad. Conrad is... Could you fill that with baby fish? And then, if you can, anchor it up on there without it all falling down. Yeah, they all have to go in there. Yeah, no. Don't jump the gun. Don't jump the gun, Conrad. Oh, I'm not going to do that. No littering on the beach. Kia ora koutou. A little bit of feedback. I'll keep talking until it works out. Maybe we turn this one down. There we go. Great. Kia ora koutou. Nau mai haere mai. Ko Adam Hutchinson toko ingoa. My name is Adam Hutchinson, and I'm one of the pastors here, along with Colleen. Now, I'm going to just read John chapter 21. We've heard a part of that. I'm actually going to read the whole chapter. Oh, just down by your left hand there. Now, the question is, can you prop it up? That was the challenge. There you go. There you go. I'll just throw some. Oh, he did get a fish. Anyway. Right. Back to seriousness. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. That happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them, and they said, "Yeah, we'll go with you." So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net out on the right side of the boat and you'll find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, he took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus says, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This is the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" There are moments in life that can change us forever. And I wonder if you've ever had such a moment like that, where everything changed for you. Maybe it was in an instant or a moment in time. Perhaps it was a conversation in a hospital room, or a phone call in the middle of the night, a sudden event, perhaps, a meal around a table, or perhaps a moment of failure that we cannot forget, or a moment of grace and forgiveness that we expected. Something that changed the trajectory of our lives. And this passage is built around one of those moments. And we've spent a lot of time over the last weeks exploring how different people in Scripture have come to recognize Jesus as someone special, more than just a man. We've also learned about those who mistook him for someone else or didn't recognize him after his resurrection and then slowly came to a realization. We've explored people like John the Baptist, who recognized Jesus but then had doubts. And Thomas, who was uncertain and wasn't willing to rely on other people's statements, had questions to be answered. Then last week, Stephen took us to the place where that awkward space between a significant experience and the what next, that liminal space of what now. And I want to continue on from where Stephen left off last week, and I want to dive a bit deeper into that experience and then move on to what's next after that. So if you weren't here last week, or you didn't listen to it during the week, we're at the beach, the Sea of Galilee, with a charcoal fire and breakfast and seven tired disciples, one of whom is very wet. And Jesus. It's not loud and dramatic. There are no crowds. There's no triumphant entry, no miracles. It seems to be a quiet moment. They know it's the Lord, but he's obviously different because John stated, no one dared to ask who he was. There's something different about him, but they know it is him. And this final chapter of John's gospel is deeply personal and can be very personal for us, but is deeply personal for Peter. But I do need to back up from the beach, because John has written such a rich narrative full of patterns and repetition. He's tying each moment in this passage with other moments. And he's also drawing on earlier gospels that were written decades before, and the events in those where both he and Peter were present. Matthew, Mark, Luke. And when reading the gospel, the account of John, we should always read it and assume that if John says something in a particular way, he has a reason. If he names someone, it's for a reason. If he mentions a number, it's for a reason. Or a day, or a time, or a place, or even small details like actions or moments. John wants us to read slowly and often, to meditate. He wants us to notice the connections. He wants us to see deep meaning beneath the surface. And here's an interesting fact. In the book of John, Peter is mentioned in 36 verses. 28 of those are from chapter 13 to this part in 21. The first part of John's gospel, it's actually the same in Luke. The heavy emphasis is on the group of disciples. But there comes a moment in this narrative where John wants us to zone in on the person of Peter. The intensity of the focus on Peter comes from the Last Supper and the washing of the feet through to this final moment. The whole narrative moves from that focus to zoom in on Peter as a major character, woven through six distinct narrative sections. The Last Supper, the arrest, the denial, the crucifixion, the resurrection, and then in this moment now, by the fire. So I'm going to test your knowledge a wee bit first. I might throw a chocolate fish. So I'm going to mention some things that happened in this particular passage in John chapter 21. I want you to tell me if you can remember where they've happened before, if you've heard them before. A miraculous catch of fish. Where has anyone heard that before anywhere else in the Gospels? Stephen. Luke 5, nice one. You can have a fish. You have to come to the fire though, grab your fish. Just an aside, what did Peter say to Jesus during that moment? Yeah, Conrad, go away from me, for I am a sinner. Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinner. What did Jesus say to Peter? Follow me? Make you fishers of men. From now on, you'll fish for people. Can anyone remember another time? So Peter had taken off his outer garment. John thought it was very important to note that he'd taken off his outer garment and then put it back on. Can you remember another time where someone took off their outer garment? Washing of the feet. What about someone jumping out of a boat? Who was walking on water? Peter was walking on water. Luke 8, Matthew 14. What about loaves and fishes? Has that ever happened anywhere before? Any of the 5,000? 5 and 4 and heaps of people. What about when, in the passage here, it says Jesus took the bread and gave it to them? Where's that happened before? Last Supper. Now, here's one that might be more obscure, and I've pointed out the term charcoal fire. So Jesus was standing there, sitting there by a charcoal fire, and it's specifically a charcoal fire. The NIV messes it up a bit because it's just trying to interpret the meaning, but John has very specifically chosen a word that says charcoal fire, not a driftwood fire, a fire using charcoal. Charcoal is hard to produce. Burning coals are hard to create. It means intensity and warmth, not just a driftwood. It's been there a while if it's been burning. Where else has there been a charcoal fire? Peter's denial. Okay. So all these moments, are you noticing some of the connections here that in this passage of Scripture, there's a little hyperlink back to all these other moments that Peter has been involved in? So before we come back to the fire, I want to explore Peter's journey with Jesus through the last chapters of John. So there's, you don't have to see that for now, I'll enlarge it a bit. 6 stages, but really only 5. So we have the Last Supper. And in all of these, you'll notice that I've put the word passionate. Peter has been passionate about something. He has passionately responded, positively or negatively. There's a passion and an impulsive, and a deep impulsiveness or passion behind what Peter does. Everything he does is with great passion. So at the Last Supper, we have the foot washing. We have Jesus taking off his outer garment. We have Peter arguing with Jesus about how much he's going to get washed or not at all. And Peter says, well, if I can't be part, wash all of me. You know, wash everything. And during that time, we see Jesus breaking bread. Then we have the arrest. Peter passionately defending Jesus by chopping off someone's ear. Then we have the denial. Peter passionately calling down curses on the person that kept asking him. Denied Jesus 3 times by a charcoal fire where he was warming himself because he was cold. 3 times he denied Jesus by a charcoal fire. And then at number 4, the crucifixion, in John's account, Luke's account, all the other accounts, Peter is absent. He is not there. He is not mentioned. He has nothing to do with that part of the chapter. There's silence when it comes to Peter. And then we have the resurrection. And we have the account of John, who seems it's important to note that he had beaten Peter in a running race, which is great. But then Peter pushes past, but he emphasizes Peter's come in, and he's the one that's discovered there's this Peter desperate to discover this Jesus. What has happened? With the same passion. But let's pause at number 6. I'm going to stop there for a moment. Because John 21 begins with Peter saying, I'm going out to fish. And at one level, that sounds really ordinary, but it's loaded with meaning. Because as we've talked, Peter's entire journey with Jesus began in boats, with nets and with water, through a miraculous catch of fish. And it states that John and his brother James were there, his business partners. And at that time, he fell at Jesus' feet with a cry, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. And now after the crucifixion and resurrection, Peter returns to the very place where the story began. But this time, he's not the confident disciple promising loyalty. This is Peter after denial, after shame, after failure. This is Peter, the sinful man. And they fish all night, and they catch nothing. And then another miraculous catch. And then another moment of recognition. It is the Lord. At first, they don't recognize him. It says, early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize it was Jesus. Again, a repeated theme in the book of John. And John is showing us something profoundly human, I think, and profoundly spiritual in our walk with Jesus, is that we often do not recognize Jesus immediately, even when he's standing right in front of us, even maybe when we've known him for a long time. Sometimes grief may blind us, or shame, sometimes disappointment, or maybe familiarity blinds us to Jesus. Sometimes our own expectations might blind us to Jesus. But he keeps revealing himself, and he often has to do that through the past memories that we have. Because here comes the turning point. Jesus tells them to cast the net on the right side of the boat, and the nets fill, and suddenly the beloved disciple says, it is the Lord. A recognition through a memory. The miracle triggers recollection, and the recollection reawakens recognition. And then in one tiny verse, a multitude of images, each rich with meaning, collides. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. That moment when Jesus had taken off his outer garment to wash the disciples' feet and had an argument about whether Peter should be washed by Jesus and then demanding a full bath is brought back into focus. As Peter wraps his outer garment around him and then he takes a full bath in the Sea of Galilee. An act which also brings back to mind that moment where he stepped out of the boat to walk on water. It harks to baptism. That moment of stepping through waters to go and see Jesus. But now instead of telling Jesus to go away from him because he was a sinful man, Peter now leaps out of the boat towards Jesus, the one he stepped out of the boat for before. This was a man running toward Jesus despite his failure. He knew the man who waited for him. Then we arrive at the fire, the center of the story. And it also carries those important links or parallels back to other parts of John's gospel. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. And at first glance, we can read through these things so quickly. It seems like a simple detail, but John never includes unnecessary details. If it's there, it should be there. The phrase is charcoal fire, and it appears only twice in John's gospel. The other time is back around a charcoal fire in the courtyard of the high priest while Jesus is being tried. And around that fire, Peter denies Jesus 3 times with great passion while Jesus watches. Now he stands beside another charcoal fire, warming himself after an early morning swim. And that breakfast, we are told explicitly that Jesus takes the bread and gives it to them, harking back to, "This is my body broken for you." That moment where the disciples on the road to Emmaus also recognized that it was him. For Peter, this was last given to him when Jesus was predicting that he would deny him. John is deliberately linking all these scenes. This beachside moment is not merely breakfast. It's restoration and remembrance. Jesus is not ignoring the painful past. He is deliberately bringing Peter back to the place of failure and many other experiences all together at once, not to shame him, but to heal him. And that is how Jesus works. We often want healing without revisiting old wounds. But Jesus lovingly brings Peter back through memory and experience so that healing can occur and restoration can happen deeply. But we notice something else. Jesus already has fish. He already has bread. He already has charcoal. And I don't know about you, but I often imagine Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, walking around in the markets, buying fish, buying bread, buying charcoal, not miraculously popping them out of the air. Unknown Jesus, resurrected God, walking among the people, purchasing items from unsuspecting sellers. The disciples ultimately bring nothing that Jesus needs. In fact, when he asks them to bring fish, he's only asking them to bring the thing that he's already provided to them anyway. And yet Jesus still invites them into the work. This is mission. The risen Jesus does not need us because he lacks power. He includes us because he desires relationship and partnership. And he has chosen to use the broken and the healed to be the healers of the broken. He has chosen to use the broken and the healed to be the healers of the broken. Even after failure, even after denial, even after shame, Peter failed publicly and now Jesus restores him personally, around a fire, with breakfast. There is something profoundly beautiful about the ordinary tenderness of Jesus. The risen King of the universe cooks breakfast for exhausted failures. The risen King of the universe cooks breakfast for exhausted failures. That is who Jesus is. Then after breakfast, they go for a walk. And now comes the famous exchange we've heard read today. Jesus obviously seeks time alone with Peter and calls him by the name he carried when he first met him. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Three times Jesus asks. Three times Peter responds. Three times Jesus commissions him with a task. Why three? Because Peter denied Jesus three times. There's a pattern. John is using repetition here to emphasize restoration. Every question reverses a denial. Every response rebuilds what shame destroyed. But John's use of three carries even deeper meaning, because throughout Scripture, repetition intensifies significance. And the number three signifies completeness. When Isaiah hears, "Holy, holy, holy," or Paul pleads three times for his thorn to be removed, or Jesus prays three times in Gethsemane, we have Father, Son, and Spirit. We have 3 days and three nights. We have three times explicitly noted that this is the third time that Jesus has appeared at this point. And there are many other examples of three if you go looking for them. Three represents completion, fullness, confirmation. Peter's denial was complete. His failure was complete. But his restoration is also complete. It is not partial. And Jesus does not just forgive Peter. He recommissions him. Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. And this is one of the great themes of John's gospel, that failure is not the end of the story when Jesus is involved. Jesus is not simply calling Peter to heroic strength now. He is calling him to surrendered love. Peter's story has always been a rhythm of recognition, failure, rescue, then deeper recognition, then deeper calling. But the foundation for joining in with Jesus is not gifting. It is love. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Not are you impressive? Are you successful? Are you strong? Are you passionate? Are you knowledgeable? Do you love me? And Jesus meets Peter exactly where he is. Peter no longer makes grand promises. The overconfident disciple is gone. Now there is humility, honesty, dependence. And Jesus can build on that. Restoration is never just about personal healing. Our restoration has missional overtones to it. Jesus restores Peter so he can participate in Jesus' work. The miraculous catch points forward again to the mission to go and catch people. The shepherding language points forward to leadership and stewardship and care for Jesus' people. The repeated command to follow me points forward to discipleship. Mission, stewardship, discipleship. And John closes Peter's story where it always needs to end, not with self-confidence, but with surrendered following. And then Peter turns around and says, "What about him?" Isn't that so human? Even after restoration, Peter is trying to compare and think about other people. Jesus brings it right back to him. He says, "What is that to you? You follow me." And Jesus would say that to us today. What are you doing? Do you love me? Follow me. Feed my sheep. Jesus' work is in each person is unique. And John's whole gospel and all the series that we've done shows different people recognizing Jesus in different ways. Nicodemus through questions, the Samaritan woman through conversation, Thomas through evidence, Mary through hearing her name intimately spoken, Peter through repeated encounters of failure and grace. And Jesus seems to tailor his response to each person according to their needs and who they are. Some encounter Jesus dramatically, others gradually, some through suffering, others through beauty, some through intellectual searching, others through profound brokenness. So at the center of the story is a fire, and one fire represents denial, the other fire represents restoration. And between those two fires stands Jesus, crucified, risen. And that is the gospel, because Jesus steps into the space between our failure and our future. He takes our sin and he brings new hope of new life. He does not ignore our wounds. He does not minimize our sin. He does not shame us in our weakness. Instead, he meets us there personally, patiently, loyally, lovingly. Recognition of Jesus for each of us is not one single moment. Peter recognized Jesus in the boats, on the water. He recognized him as Messiah. He failed to recognize the true nature of Jesus' kingdom. He denied him, but then he recognized him again on the shore. Recognition was deepened through every encounter, no matter what that was. And perhaps that's where some of us are today. Maybe you're in a season of confusion. Maybe you are carrying failure. Maybe you feel like you have returned to empty nets and old disappointments. Maybe you wonder whether Jesus could still use someone like you. Maybe some moment has happened to you that seems to have changed the trajectory of your life. John chapter 21 answers that sensation, that feeling with hope. Jesus still comes looking for people who fail today. Jesus still cooks breakfast for weary or disappointed disciples. Jesus still restores around the fire. Jesus still calls people into mission. Jesus still says, "Follow me." Regardless of what you're experiencing, the question is, do you love me? And perhaps the invitation is not simply to believe in Jesus once more, but maybe the invitation is to recognize him more deeply in this moment that you're in, whatever that is. To look back and notice the repeated patterns of grace, to see how he has pursued you by resurfacing memories of times gone past, to bring meaning, to see how he has pursued you through memory, failure, restoration, to understand that even the painful moments may become places of encounter. And around the fire, Peter discovered what we must all eventually learn, that Jesus is not finished with us yet. So as we come to the table today, which table are you coming to? Perhaps you'd like to come to the table of remembering Jesus' blood shed and his body broken. Perhaps that's the table you wish to come to today. Or perhaps like you'd like to come to the table on the beach and take the bread of restoration and recommissioning or remembering. Or both. Both tables are open to you. So we're going to play a song now, if you can start that off, and just invite you to come. There's tables.